Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. Joining us as always, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm at AH Malcolm on Twitter X. And not a member of the Protection Racket Media conspiracy to cover up basically everything about Joe Biden. I mean, the last 48 hours.
Oh my gosh.
Or 72 hours. I guess 72 hours. The last 72 hours have been absolutely astounding.
Yeah.
And I mean, I didn't know that it could get worse. It's actually worse today than I actually thought it was when I first stopped working on Friday. I had to come back and write a post Friday night because of the release of the her tapes. I mean, Andrew, this is real, you know, deep conspiracy stuff that we're seeing unfold here.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And if people were reading Hot Air and Red State in the last couple or 3 years, they knew it. It was clear there was a conspiracy with the media and within the administration. And now the books come out, and oh, coincidentally, we hear that the president has an advanced stage of prostate cancer, which didn't happen in the last few weeks. So he had a physical in February last year, excuse my cynicism, but he had a physical last year. And the doctor phrased his report very carefully. He said he was fit to be president and there were no new medical issues. Keyword there, new. So yeah, I think they knew. Can you imagine the uproar if he had been reelected?
Yeah.
And I mean, the whole thing is such a mess. That crowd is so corrupt. And it's elder abuse. You know, I mean, I don't think that Joe Biden was sitting up there in the Lincoln office saying, you know what? What we'll do, we'll play this off. You know, the guy was told where to go and what to say. They even had a machine signed for him. There should be a thorough investigation, and there should be some comeuppance. And, you know, his wife, I think maybe she liked being first lady a little too much.
You think? I think Hunter liked being first son a little too much, too.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Now you know why they didn't want the her tapes released. You know, and this is the other thing, too.
We knew that at the time. I mean,
right.
We had seen evidence of him saying, where is the dead representative at a speech? You know, it's like we knew he was out of it because we were just looking. Anybody who looked could see that. Anyway, yeah, you were saying.
Well, I mean, it's true. We all knew because we could see what was going on stage. And people would say, well, it's a stutter, you know, blah, blah. You know, Jake Tapper was one of those. It's not a stutter. But you know, one of the things that was the takeaway for me from this is that they weren't doing the deposition at 9 o'clock at night. Right. We had heard, well, you know, he just gets tired at night. Right. That was the thing after the bay. He just gets tired at night, which we would normally call sundowning when we're talking about people who are, you know, descending into senility. This wasn't sundowning. I mean, presumably this was during business hours.
This was sunrising.
Kind of. I mean, this was during business hours. This is when Joe, oh no, he's fine. He's fine. He's fine. Joe Biden's conducting the business of the country. And really, you know, you can
sharp as a tack?
Sharp as a tack. Sharp as a tack. Yes, sir. That's exactly what it was. Sharp as a tack. Running rings around AIDS half his age, right? And now we find out, well, first up, there's that, right? The her thing comes out. And then the sideline I was going to go with on that with you was, who leaked it? Because I don't think the White House did. The White House didn't need to leak it. They could have just, and I'm sure Pam Bondi would have held a press conference to say, here are all 5 hours of the her tapes. You should take a listen to this. et cetera, you know, and so on and so forth.
Leaking,
so who leaked them?
Yeah, leaking things gives it to the media a certain cachet, a certain sense of urgency. Ooh, something secret is out. You know, you're going to leak something that you would have announced on Wednesday anyway, but ooh, we can get a jump on it now.
Do you think it was the Department of Justice that did it? Because I mean,
I don't know who did it, but it confirmed, but the her tape wasn't as shocking as the cancer was, and the clear definition that he's had it for some time, and now that the proverbial dung is hitting the fan, we bring in the violins with cancer. Remember, he had a cancer. This is just so Joe Biden. He had a cancer foundation or fighting it, and he got millions of dollars. And he hired his old cronies and paid them a fortune, like $400,000 a year, to run his charity that was going to defeat cancer. And as I recall, there was a report that said they hadn't really spent much on research anyway. So
anything. Now it was all on salaries, right? I mean, it was basically stuff went to salaries for people. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Which is what actually he learned that from Obama. Obama did that I forgot what it was called, you know, A New Day or A New Dawn or Dreaming of a Grand Future and some bozo title that was his ongoing campaign organization. And he planted guys there and paid them good money.
Yeah, it's the Clinton Foundation all over again, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's the model for maintaining your political organization when you're not in office, and that's, I think, the Clinton Foundation certainly was that. I would assume that the Joe Biden thing was probably at least partly that.
But, and then they had the Cancer Institute, and then they had Hunter busy. I mean, I. In 2013, Joe Biden went on an official visit to Beijing on Air Force Two, and he took along Hunter. And that was when he didn't talk with Hunter about his businesses or his business associates. And then we have pictures of him, of Joe introducing Hunter to Xi Jinping. And anyway, Hunter consolidated his business deal worth millions in China, but of course Joe Biden knew nothing about it. And then the Treasury Department reported suspicious transfers of millions of dollars to shell companies that Hunter and James Biden had set up. I mean, it's just smells so badly. It's just. I'm sorry, cancer is bad for anybody and everybody has sympathy for it. But my cynicism prompts me to suspect that he had it all along and they just wanted to get back into office.
Well, and I think that that's a reasonable suspicion. You know, it's, David Axelrod was out today. Or I think it was actually last night saying, well, now we should temper our discussion of Biden's mental acuity. Are you kidding me? This is more of the same thing. You mentioned this to start this discussion off, but I'll bring it back around to this. You don't get to stage 4 prostate cancer with metastasis in the bones for years. Prostate cancer is a slow moving cancer. And that's why you have PSA tests. Now, there's some dispute as to whether or not after you pass 70, you should bother to have a PSA test. But if not, then you're getting the digital test. And I don't mean to analog. I'm talking about the digital test.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Men of a certain age remember that very well. And at any rate, you're getting tested. And the president of the United States is probably getting, one would presume, be tested literally up the wazoo, I guess we could say.
Yeah.
For this specific thing. And, Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, who's Rahm Emanuel's brother, who was one of the architects of Obamacare, went on MSNBC this morning and said, there is no way this thing developed in 100 or 200 days since Joe Biden left office. This has been going on for years. They probably knew about it for years. They've been covering that up too. And they covered it up just the same way they covered up his cognitive disabilities, because they wanted to get another 4 years out of Joe Biden. And they were going to do a weekend at Bernie's with the guy and ride his carcass for as long as possible. That's
ride his carcass. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And what better time to release all the violin music than when all these books are coming out to change the subject from all these books about how devious they'd been for 4 years, 5 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, the books are a whole other thing, right? I mean, we've been talking about the attempts to rescue the media's reputation by saying, we were misled. And I call this the Owen maneuver. And I don't know if did we discuss this before, the Owen maneuver?
I don't think so. Oh,
okay. Did you ever see the movie Throw Mama from the Train with Danny DeVito and Billy Crystal?
No.
It's actually a pretty funny movie, right? It's a comedy that's sort of based on Strangers on a Train, right? So you have to, I have to give a little background in case people haven't seen the movie, and for Andrew's benefit as well. Billy Crystal plays this writing instructor who's furious with his ex-wife for stealing his great novel and making a fortune off of it, who left him and then stole his novel, right? So he's teaching this, this adult education, creative writing class. And Danny DeVito plays this guy who's sort of a dimwit, well, is a real dimwit, bordering on possibly, some sort of low IQ disorder sort of thing, who decides that he wants to do a Strangers on a Train thing with Billy Crystal. He'll kill Billy Crystal's ex-wife if Billy Crystal will kill his mother, right? And Billy Crystal doesn't want to have anything to do with this.
Why am I laughing?
Well, it is a fun setup, right? And his mother is this really overbearing, awful woman who was just played to perfection by Anne Ramsey. She'd had a stroke and she was having difficulty with the dialogue, but she was great. He's over at the house trying to talk Owen out of this. And his mother bursts in and says, "Who is that?" He says, "Oh, this is Cousin Billy," or whatever it is, "Cousin Billy." And she goes, "You don't have a Cousin Billy." So he turns around to Billy Crystal and says, "You lied to me," and whacks him upside the head with a pan. And that's the Owen maneuver, right? I mean, this is CNN, Jake Tapper, all these media people were saying, "Well, the White House lied to us." They're Danny DeVito and Billy Crystal's the White House, right? Yeah. "You lied to us." No, you were in on it. You were driving the conspiracy.
And if it's true, of course they lied to them, but if it's true that they believed the lies, then they aren't really media. I mean, it's a terrible professional.
Well, I mean, come on. Nobody really believed this, right? I mean, they were attacking anybody who asked questions about Joe Biden's cognitive issues by claiming that they were ableist. Tapper infamously went after Laura Trump, and this was 4 years ago, I think, well, almost 5 years ago now, for raising the issue in the 2020 campaign and saying something to the effect of, children around the country are going to feel terrible that, they who have stutters are going to feel terrible that, the people are attacking an old man with a stutter. Are you freaking kidding me? And now they're saying, "Well, you lied to us." Boom.
Yeah.
It's all the White House's fault. Chuck Todd.
Well, Jake Tapper. It was Nikki Haley during the campaign who suggested that there should be cognitive tests for president and age limits.
Yeah, I mean, what was funny about that is she kind of meant it as a dig at Trump. I mean, she clearly it was also aimed at Joe Biden, but I think she kind of meant it as a dig at Trump because Trump, again, is, you know, 79.
He'll be 79 next month.
Yeah, 79. By the time his term's up, he'll be 82. Yeah.
This is why I question. Cognitive tests are fine, but this is why I question age limits, because clearly Trump, with 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night, is and after last week's trip, that's what I wrote the column about. After last week's trip, you're blown out. There was like the second 100 days in 1 week abroad.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously, he's vital. He's passionate. You can disagree with the things that he's doing, but there's no doubt that he's the guy that's calling the shots in this administration.
And there was a story. Remember, he had the cabinet meeting 2 or 3 weeks ago, and he commented to the one of the cabinet members that he was watching them on C-SPAN, and praising him for his testimony to Congress. And actually Political, of all places, went and checked when that was on C-SPAN, and it was 2 and 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
So Trump was doing homework at 2 or 3 in the morning. So like you say, you can question him, but not his endurance. And even in 2020 with COVID going on, Biden, well, they were hiding him in the basement and he was calling a lid at 10:30 in the morning, and Trump was doing 2 and 3 rallies a day in as many states. Cognitive tests, I wouldn't mind that if it was genuine.
If it was genuine. And this is the thing that I get into, and originally I was going to make this a VIP piece, but then the Supreme Court handed down a couple of decisions over the last couple of business days, and that got lengthy. So I decided that I made that the VIP piece for today, and it's up while we're talking. But the next post is going up on Monday evening. And now it's not VIP. It's going to be in the clear. You know, J.D. Vance was asked about this. And this is before, I take it back, I think it was after the announcement was made about Biden's cancer diagnosis. And it wasn't a lengthy statement by J.D. Vance, but J.D. Vance said, look, presidents have to be able to do the job. They have to have the physical and mental, stamina to do the job. And if you're not in good health enough to do the job, then you shouldn't be doing the job. And his argument was, we have to be honest about whether the former president was capable of doing the job. You can separate the desire for him to have the right health outcome with the recognition of whether it was doctors or whether there were staffers around the former president. I don't think he was able to do the job. And in some ways, I blame him less than the people around him. But here's the thing. And this was sort of the summary of my piece. And I kind of want to ask you about this, because I think that you have wisdom beyond most people, which is my way of saying you're old.
That's right.
But I mean, bear with me here. I argue in this piece that this is the first real test of the 25th Amendment, and it failed. I mean, certainly we've seen it used when Nixon resigned, but that was only because there was no doubt Nixon was resigning. He quit. And so the 25th Amendment, they followed the 25th Amendment. Gerald Ford became the actual president, not just an acting president. And that was the first time that had actually happened, because there had been no constitutional mechanism for that. It was a tradition. If a president died in office, the vice president just assumed the mantle. And I think that was Tyler, really, that started that. And he didn't want to be called acting president. He said, I'm the president. And I don't think he ever appointed a vice president to replace him in that role. So the 25th Amendment basically just made official what had been American practice at the time. But in this case, it was due to a resignation, which was different. That worked, but there was really no other choice. This is the first time we've had a presidential incapacity arguable incapacity. And nobody who was in position to put the Constitution into force to address the situation of an incapacitated president would act. Not the vice president, not the cabinet officers. Those are the people in the 25th Amendment who can initiate that. Mostly the vice president, I would argue. So J.D. Vance is out saying, look, we have to take this seriously. Would J.D. Vance do that? And I'm going to say it's a strictly hypothetical because Donald Trump is about as vital as anybody I've seen in this office for a very long time. Would J.D. Vance pull the trigger on the 25th Amendment if he thought that Donald Trump was incapacitated in a position where Donald Trump might dispute that? I don't think so.
It's the wrong people. They have Jill Biden, the Biden staff, and the cabinet had a stake in propping Bernie Biden up because they could stay in power, get their good salaries, and their later the better jobs post presidency. So that's the wrong people to have. And if Congress is controlled, as it was during Biden's time, by the president's party, they're not going to do anything either. So, yeah, it's a problem. It's a serious problem. And with the media on the side of Democrats, there was no real call for it. Should have been.
I mean, and here's the thing. Every other check and balance in the Constitution relies on a co-equal branch being the enforcement mechanism, being the check. Right. Yeah. Except for this. Yeah.
That's a good point.
The executive branch can't check the executive branch. And I think this is a really great demonstration of how this has failed. And we need another approach. And I would say we actually need to change a number of things. First off, no more presidential physician. Have him go over to Walter Reed, draw straws over there amongst the branches. and have a rotation of doctors from the military that's checking out the commander in chief to make sure he's up to the job. And I don't mean once a year. I mean, maybe once a quarter. Do blood draws, do physical examinations, make sure the guy is up for the job and then report to Congress.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. You need to necessarily make cognition an issue. I mean, first off, let's face it.
The problem. I mean,
well, it wasn't the old problem. It was also physical, but yes. So cognition is an issue. Let's put the responsibility where it really lies on that. It's with the American voters who elected a doddering old fool president.
That's right. who was hiding in the campaign because 70% of Democrats in 2020 said they were voting for Biden, not for Biden, but against Trump.
Yeah. I mean, you have to have Congress have a role in this thing.
We skated on thin ice his whole presidency, but especially the last 2 years. And the last, 7 months? Jeez, I mean, if you were if you were an evil bad guy on the stage, why wouldn't you take advantage of American presidency that was incapacitated?
Well, I mean, didn't Russia do that? Didn't Russia do that when it invaded Ukraine?
You're right. Yeah, they did it because Biden was in, and he waited. He waited the entire term of Trump to not do anything, and 2 months. Putin 2 months after Trump left, Putin started organizing the invasion, and a year later they did invade. So yeah, I guess in that case they did. And guess what? Even when they had Obama, they invaded. 2008, they took over two provinces of Georgia. 2013, they did Crimea and the eastern part of Ukraine. And then Trump comes and, we put a lid on it.
Well,
he put a lid.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a mess. That is a mess. And speaking of Trump, boy, I thought he pulled off a masterpiece last week in that trip.
Yeah, and this is the topic of your VIP column, which we should really get to here, because we're not that far off from finishing up here. I don't know if I think all of these things are going to play out, but I don't think I've seen a foreign policy trip like this.
Oh, no.
I'm trying to remember the last one that I would have seen that.
No.
I mean, I don't recall any like this at all.
No, I don't either. I don't recall a single one. Presidential trips are usually very expensive, prolonged photo ops. Okay, and meeting the king, meeting the queen, and signing documents that were arranged before the Air Force One even took off from Washington. And you know, that's fine. And having toasts to reiterate the longstanding friendship that will never change, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure much of what Trump accomplished was certainly being negotiated before he left. But boy, the package of stuff he did reminded me of the first 100 days. It was just boom, 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 boom. Over $2 trillion worth of stuff. Now we hope it all happens, but it's kind of public commitments by the three royal families and buying, what was it, 149 or 42 jet airliners from Boeing and Qatar. And it's just an amazing collection of economic accomplishments that will produce billions and billions in investments in the U.S., plus support hundreds of thousands of jobs. And it fits his narrative, okay? So I was really stunned. I've had some cautions about him, and I still have some about what he's doing on Ukraine, but holy smokes, last week he pulled off a walk-off grand slam, as far as I'm concerned, and he's not walking off.
No. And again, some of this stuff there's still some percolation needed for some of this stuff to actually come to fruition. But just the fact that we're talking about things like bringing Syria in on the Abraham Accords.
Yeah.
I mean, and to be fair, so Israel is also trying to do the same thing, because initially it was like, we're talking with a guy this is a guy, Al-Sharaa is the guy's name. I can't remember his first name, who actually had a $10 million bounty on his head 6 months ago from the U.S. because he was an Al-Qaeda in Iraq guy and then avoided ISIS, but his organization in Syria was jihadist. But he's the guy now. He is the head of state in Syria just simply by dint of conquest. And so you have to deal with the guy, or at least you should try to deal with the guy. And I don't think that Joe Biden, even in his right mind, would have done that. I'm not even sure that George W. Bush would have done that either. It's a pretty ballsy move by Trump to do that.
Trump underlined that in his speech to the investment group investors in Saudi Arabia, where he said, "I'm all for peace and security and coming up on people that even when we have profound differences, we can work together." And boy, he sure did. And he's still listed as a terrorist, the new leader in Syria. And so it's pragmatic. They took off
the bounty. They did take off the bounty. I think they did that a little while ago. But yes, yeah. I mean, his organization is still listed as a terrorist organization. And, you know, you had guys like Lindsey Graham saying, well, I'm hoping that Trump is going to require this guy to make some moves here first. But right. agreeing to ally with Israel certainly would go a long way towards that. And he's offering the guy an opportunity to be a responsible leader. And if he doesn't take it, he doesn't take it. But at least you can't say that the guy didn't have the opportunity to work with the people in the region.
We didn't push him into going back to terrorism. Right. By not. It's a kind of, you could argue, I guess, in a way that it was cynical, but it's a power move by a power guy. And it could work out. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But he did the same. Remember all the crap that Trump took when he reached out to Kim Jong-un in North Korea? Three presidents at least had tried to get Kim to talk with them. All failed. Both parties, they all failed. Clinton, Bush, and Obama, they all failed. Trump did it, and he did it at the same time as he had very serious threats. I think it was, this quote was, fire and fury if he ever attacked the U.S. or our allies. He sent not one, but two nuclear carrier groups with their entourage, their military entourage, into the area, including subs, to convince him. And Kim stopped his provocative launches out over the Pacific, and he came to the table twice. Now, that's progress, okay? And guess what? There's two nuclear carrier groups in the Mideast now, and there's six B-2 bombers on Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean. So the implied threat is there for Iran. We hope for the best. I think Trump, just in summation, I think what Trump is trying to do is to clear the table of a lot of U.S. military involvement in Europe and the Mideast. All these military sales to the kingdoms so they can defend themselves, which is also good for the American economy and jobs. Trying to work out a peace, I hope it works out better than it looks, in Ukraine, talking to Iran, and doing this is Syria business. It kind of, not clearing the table, but tempering it down, because he sees that the real confrontation is going to come in Asia. And this isn't 1990 anymore. We can't handle two military conflicts at a time anymore.
Right.
And we're going to be over a barrel in Asia anyway. We got like 8,000 miles and 1,800 miles supply line, and China is literally, the Taiwan Islands start so close to the Chinese coast. It's like Staten Island and Manhattan Island. It's very close. So that's going to be a tough one if it comes to conflict.
Well, you know, it may very well, but I mean, I'm not sure we can handle a war with China just on one front anyway. And that's one of the things, you know, if you read, it's a good essayist on Substack, Commander Salamander, who is a naval guy, who is a very good analyst for these things. And he's been talking about this for years. Hugh Hewitt's been talking about this for years. The fact that we don't have enough ships in the Navy to deal with the threat in the Pacific.
China's fleet, I don't know about the quality, but China's fleet is 50% larger than ours now.
Yep. Yeah. And it's blue water too. It's not just brown water. It used to be mainly brown water, you know, and it's not anymore. Right.
And it's regional. Ours is global. But China is setting up its own GPS system. They take care of and knock ours out. They got their own. So
that's right.
It's a sticky mess, and kind of winnowing down our obligations in other places. Not so much that it would threaten European peace, but making Europeans take over much more of their own defense They've been coasting. Yeah, they've been coasting since the Soviet bloc fell.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Well, speaking of coasting, I think we're coasting into the end of our podcast. How's that for a segue? You got a joke for us today?
I'm impressed. I think I do. Let's see. Nestle. Oh, these are old. Seth Meyers says Nestle's is recalling its Hot Pockets four cheese pizza snack bites due to mislabeling. They'll be re-released with the correct label, scalding hot yet somehow still frozen in the middle pockets.
That's truth in advertising.
Yeah, exactly right. And Jimmy Fallon said there's a senior Olympics in California last weekend, but 90% of the athletes tested positive for Ensure. And the Chinese gymnasts claimed to be 90, but they were only 86. The gymnasts.
All right, I got a couple for you here. First off, this old man is putting on his coat, and his wife says, "Where are you going?" He says, "I'm going to the doctor." She says, "Are you sick?" And he says, "No, I'm going to go to the doctor and see if I can get me some of that Viagra stuff." So his wife starts putting on her coat, and he says, "Where are you going?" She says, "Well, I'm going to go to the doctor too." And he says, "Why?" She says, "Well, if you're going to use that rusty old thing, I need a tetanus shot."
Okay.
There you go. One more. A man's at work one day, and he's got a good buddy at work, and his good buddy looks over and he notices that the guy has an earring. He's wearing an earring. And he looks back a couple times and says, "Are you wearing an earring?" And the guy says, "Yeah." And he says, "That's not your style." He says, "I never thought I'd see you wearing an earring." He says, "It's just an earring. Don't make a big deal about it." And the guy says, "All right, well." He says, "Look, have you been wearing that for very long?" And the guy says, "Only since my wife found it in the truck."
Okay.
There you go. Hello.
All right. Quick thinking.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's a wise man. All right. Andrew Malcolm, the prince of Twitter, the regent of redstate.com. Another great conversation. Now, we're not going to be doing it next week. We've got the Memorial Day. So we'll come back in 2 weeks and do another podcast at that point in time.
Sounds good. I'll see you then. Thanks, everybody. Edward, as always, thank you all these years.
Thank you, sir. Sit right back to you.